thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
It was about 4 months ago, early December, where Pastor George and I were hosting an all-staff meeting, and we were sharing vision with the staff. We had recently made some changes to our org chart, and believing that the new structure would facilitate us having the better ability to reach for the future as to what we do as a church. And I often see vision through the form of structure, processes, and use those kind of things to accomplish vision. And Pastor George, classic Pastor George, is a great visionary who sees vision through inspiration. And so in this season, there's a great bond between the two of us working together for the future of our church. But I had been spending the first hour kind of unpacking our changes to how we structure internally as a church and as a staff. And he, the night before, had been studying, what would he say? He was allowing me to carry the bulk of the meeting in terms of the structure and the inspiration as far as why we're making the change. But God really put something on his heart the night before. It was found in Joshua. And if you've been around Faith for any length of time, you know that the story of Joshua is one of Pastor George's favorite stories in all of Scripture. He identifies with it in a very real and personal way. He's inspired by it in a very real and personal way. So the night before, he's studying, God, what would you have me say to the staff? What do you want me to encourage them in? And God gave him some things he had never seen before. And that's a tad bit of a surprise because he's taught on Joshua for 30 plus years. He's sort of seen it all, done it all in terms of this story. But that's what I love about Pastor George. It's his sensitivity to allowing God to continue to speak new truths out of something he could just kind of set to the side and say, I've seen that and heard that. There was a new truth. It's found in Joshua chapter 3. You'll see it on the screens or you can open your Bible. This is what Pastor George shared with us that day. He said this, early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out and went to the Jordan where they were camped before crossing over. You see, Israel was about to move into the promised land. We know the rest of the story. They didn't know for sure how and if they were going to make it. But it says this, after 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp giving orders to the people. Here are the orders. They said this, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. You will know which way to go since you have never been this way before. Think about that. You have never been this way before. This territory, this future, this promised land, how we're going to get there, when we're going to get there, why we're going to get there, it's totally uncharted. And God shared that with our staff, or I'm sorry, God through Pastor George shared that with our staff. And something shifted in our psyche, something shifted and our collective kind of passion for the future of our church that, yeah, we are in a season of transition. There are some different things happening around us, but the reality is God has walked people through this sort of situation before, that even in the story of Joshua, he reminds the people, you have never been this way before. And Pastor George said to us, you guys, I've never been this way before, but I trust and have faith in God, who is as good to us as he was to the nation of Israel, that he is going to take us into uncharted territory, and we're going to trust him. And where he goes, the Ark of the Covenant representing his spirit, the very tangible presence of God, where he goes, we are going to go. And we are going to go where we've never been before, and God is going to be faithful. And as we unpacked that and we saw it kind of shift the hearts of our staff and how we're thinking about the future, we realized that we needed to unpack this a little bit more, and we set it to prayer and ultimately landed on this next six-week series, that there's this idea that not only as a church, because it's true as a church, the future for us is uncharted territory. We've never been this way before, but not only us as a church, but individuals, families, that maybe in a walk of faith with Jesus, he might just actually take us into uncharted territory. That's the norm of following Jesus, that there's new land, new opportunity, new growth. And I want to say to each of you that God has something deeper, better, more fulfilling for you in your walk with him. But it's uncharted. and you've never been this way before. And so we felt it necessary to unpack that over 6 weeks and inspire and encourage and teach our way into what it means to follow God into uncharted territory. But let me explain why this is such a big deal for Joshua and the nation of Israel to move into the promised land. Many of you know the story. You know why this is a big deal, but some who are newer might say, I don't get why the story of Joshua is such a big deal in Scripture or in history. But let me explain something. Joshua, at this point in history, is the leader over the nation of Israel, and they're about to go across the Jordan River from the east to the west into what was known as the Promised Land. But when was it promised? Who was it promised to? And why was it promised? It goes way back to the beginning in Genesis 12. I'll read to you this promise. There is this man named Abram. Way back in the beginning, that God saw great potential in this man's life. And God reaches out into humanity and makes this promise in Genesis 12 to Abram. It says this, "The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household." In some ways, he's encouraging him to go to uncharted territory. "And go to the land I will show you." God then makes this promise, "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you." So Abram left as the Lord had told him. There was this promise that God had for this people to be led by Abram, that I have something for you. You can't see it in the future. You'll never be able to comprehend that your descendants will be as numerous as the stars. But I have this for you, and I promise it to you. In fact, I make covenant to you, Abram, that this is going to be true of you and your family and your descendants. God would really up the ante later in Genesis 17. He said to Abram, when he was 99 years old, the Lord appears to him again. Abram falls face down, and some things are shared. And God says this to Abram, "I will make you very fruitful. I will make the nations of you, and kings will come from you." These are some pretty bold promises from God to a man. And he says, "I will change your name from Abram to Abraham. I will establish my covenant as an everlasting covenant between me and you and your descendants and the descendants after you for generations to come, to be your God and to be the God of your descendants." He continues to up the ante, this promise that there's a future for you. There's new territory. Then God says this to Abraham, "The whole land of Canaan, where you are now alien, I will give you as an everlasting possession to you and to the descendants after you, and I will be their God." He takes this promise, this covenant, that I will be your God and you will be my people, and he attaches the covenant of this land of Canaan, this uncharted, unseen, and alien to who Abraham is, this uncharted territory. We've got to fast forward hundreds of thousands of years to this moment where Joshua is. And if you know the story, you know that it ultimately went from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. Jacob has a son, Joseph. Joseph is sold by his brothers as slave traders. He gets taken to Egypt, which is God's provision for the nation of Israel because there was a famine. And ultimately, if you know the story, all of Israel comes to Egypt and finds rescue and promise. But in that moment, something happens in Egypt. The Pharaoh in charge no longer has favor over the nation of Israel and takes that people group in Egypt and turns them into slaves. For 400 years, the nation of Israel is nowhere near the land of Canaan, nowhere near walking in the promise of what God had given to Abraham. 400 years of slavery and bondage. You know the story. Out of that angst, God prepares a man by the name of Moses. You've probably seen the Ten Commandments. It's the exodus of millions of Jews being set free from the bondage of Egypt. Joshua, who we're teaching on these next 6 weeks, was in Egypt. He was a young man at the time of the exodus, at the time of the 10 plagues, watching Moses lead this nation out. Joshua was there. In fact, when they escape the pursuit of Egypt, Joshua is instructed along with 11 other spies to go to the land of Canaan and survey the land and decide, can we take this land? This is ours. We're set free. There's a promise way back to Abraham. This is our land. Can we take it? Joshua and Caleb come back and said, oh yeah, we can take it. Yeah, it's going to be difficult, but we got it. God is on our side. 10 other spies say there's no way. Joshua and Caleb argue to the point where they're threatened to be stoned to death. They say, we can take it. The other 10 say, we cannot, and they threaten to stone them to get them to shut up. God then grieves. His heart is grieved because he has this promised land. He just set them free from 400 years of slavery, and yet they can't see this new territory, this opportunity is there for them. In his grieving heart, he decides, God does, that no one in that generation will ever see the promised land, and he assigns to them 40 years of wandering in the desert because of their doubt and unbelief in God's power to move them into this land. In fact, Joshua is one of the only ones allowed from that generation to actually see the promised land. That story to come in our next number of weeks, but let me just set this story up. Joshua is standing on the precipice of history, world history. The stage is set. God makes his promise to Abraham, not only about the people, but the land. And Joshua's here poised, 400 years of slavery, 40 years of wandering, and this is the moment in Joshua 1 where there's an opportunity to see world history come to pass. You see, before we move on to the story and unpack the next 6 weeks, and I know Pastor George is going to be inspired to share all sorts of great truths with you, the first step Joshua leads the camp in is preparing to take the new territory. You can grab your notes. That's how I've titled today's message, Preparing for New Territory. Now, when I say preparing, some of you are action-oriented people. The word prepare scares you greatly, does it not? My wife is one of these. She takes action by taking action. Does that make sense? Some of us that like to prepare, we're thinking, what? How do you take action by taking action? You have to think about it first. My wife is not that. She takes action by taking action. Some of us like to prepare. I've got a good friend. He has this philosophy about life. It's called the 5 P's. He lives by it every day, every moment of every day. Proper preparation prevents poor performance. He's anal about it, but he often has great performance because of it. This moment and this season, I would not do it justice today if I didn't get us ready for the next 5 weeks, if I didn't take a moment to prepare our hearts for what God is going to say to us through the story of Joshua. It's kind of like packing. Some of you men, you don't love to pack, and your wife gets assigned to do that because it's so painful. But that's what we're doing today. We're packing. We're packing for an unknown land. We're packing for an unknown territory. We're going to prepare our hearts for this new territory. That's what we're going to tackle today. We'll start in Joshua 1. The reason we need to prepare is we've never been there before. But let's see what Joshua 1 says to us. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, I'm just going to stop right there. There's been a death of a great leader, Moses. In fact, we can just turn our Bibles back a few pages to Deuteronomy 34. It's one of those places where one book actually leads historically into the next book. So turn to Deuteronomy 34. We need to look at the death of Moses. In order to prepare for the new territory, we need to understand more about what's happened. We need perspective from the past. Deuteronomy 34, verse 5 says this, "And Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in Moab, as the Lord had said. He buried him in Moab in the valley opposite to Beth Peor, but to this day no one knows where his grave is." In fact, right before that death, if you read earlier in Deuteronomy 34, the Lord takes Moses up into this high point so he can survey the promised land that he'll never step foot in, but he gets to see it and it stretch out before him. So he passes away, he's buried. This is kind of the epitaph on his tomb. It says, "Moses was 120 years old when he died, yet his eyes were not weak, nor his strength gone." That's an interesting statement. Why would Scripture record that? Moses was 120 years old when he died, yet his eyes were not weak, and his strength not gone. You see, God needed to make a change, but in the natural, it didn't look like any change was necessary. Moses was strong, he had his eyesight, he had his strength. And this is our first point today. You might want to write this down. We must recognize that the need for change is often unrecognizable. We must recognize inside of us that the need for change is often unrecognizable. Moses was a phenomenal leader. He was incredible. He had served God so faithfully that miracles happened to release them from bondage. He led his people through 40 years in the desert of murmuring and complaining. He had brought down the Ten Commandments from the mountain. Moses was an incredible leader and still had his strength of eyesight and his strength of his body. We must recognize that the need for change is often unrecognizable. Let me tell you a story where I realized this truth in my life a while back. My wife and I, we are graduates of the University of Denver Business School. We studied there. I studied finance and marketing. My wife studied marketing. And when we were graduating, we were preparing to get married. We had dated all through college, and we had decided that after we graduate, 6 days later, we'll go ahead and get married. That's a little scary, right? Finals, graduation, wedding planning, all sorts of crazy stuff. So we graduate on a Saturday. We get married the following Friday. But all along that way, we had been doing all the right things. I had been doing all the right things as far as getting good grades, graduating with honors. I had been doing all the right internships, busting my tail to work and serve and find ways that I could grow in my experience. And if you remember the mid and late 90s, it was one of the best economies America had seen in many years. In fact, it was one of the best job markets America had seen in years. In fact, co-students of mine, they were getting like signing bonuses to go to work for companies. This is like NFL kind of recruiting here. They'd get paid signing bonuses just to commit to a company. And I'm talking thousands and thousands of dollars just to say, I'm going to come work for you. This is how in demand business students were from DU at the time. Well, in a strange way, I couldn't land a job to save my life. God was not opening any door. No interview would go past the first step. I had no idea what was happening. I'm preparing for marriage. I'm going to be taking care of a new wife and creating a new family, and we're going to have bills very soon that we're going to need to pay off, and God, you're not providing anything. Well, all that spring, no opportunities came about, but I'm watching students of mine, friends of mine, get jobs that they dreamed they could have, you know, later in their career. It's happening, but for me, nothing. In fact, we go through that whole summer, I still have not been offered a job, and the bills are getting a little steep. We're trying to figure out what God's doing, and I had no idea what God was up to. Then one opportunity comes. It was at a firm called Oppenheimer Funds, but it was very different from everything I had studied. In fact, it was quite a bit different. It was a financial institution, but it was answering phone calls. See, Oppenheimer Funds has this dealer services division where financial advisors from all across the country would call in and check on their clients' accounts. And this is the job I got offered. And I'm talking like one-third the salary of some of my students. But for me, it was my first job offer. I was thankful for it. I was going to take it. I needed to start helping me and my wife pay the bills. So if you know my story, I'm shy. I grew up very shy, like someone knocks on the door, my brother and I would run and hide in the bedroom. That's shy. And in business school, I could do presentations because I understood the material and I could present. But outside of that, I was still shy. And I didn't know how shy I was or what God needed to do, but he gives me this job where I have to answer phone calls with complete strangers and have conversations with them 8 hours a day. And he had me do this for a year, and all along that year, I would question, God, why am I doing this? I know my skills in terms of finance, in terms of marketing, in terms of leadership, in terms of the experience you've given me in life and in internships are far greater than answering some account balance questions 8 hours a day, 7 days a week for one full year. God, why are you doing this? Well, I wish I could tell you that he gave me the answer in that year, but he absolutely did not. He allowed me to do that almost for an exact year to the day, and he opened a door for another opportunity, which I took because he was very faithful in doing that. But it wasn't for about 3 years after having worked at Oppenheimer Funds that God began to give me some clarity. He began to speak some things to my heart. He said, Jeff, I've got some things for you to say to people. I want to use you to say things to people. I want to use that communicator that's within you. But do you realize that you couldn't communicate with perfect strangers? Do you realize that I needed you to answer phone calls with complete strangers for 8 hours a day for a full year just to get your mouth to be able to move with complete strangers? See, the need for my change was completely unrecognizable to me. I had grown, I had the goods, I had the grades, I had the experience, I had the internships, I had the profession, I had the leadership. The need for change was completely unrecognizable, but God, in his sovereignty, saw I needed absolute change a painful year of answering phone calls with complete strangers for 8 hours a day. You see, when we see this story as Moses here needed to pass away so that he could use Joshua, the people must have feared, why did you need to do that? Well, the need for change was unrecognizable to them, but it was obvious to God. I want to encourage you that God has a great plan for your life. There's been promises spoken over you. When God knit you together in your mother's womb and however your very life came to existence, it's okay. God had a promise for you, just like he did for the nation of Israel. And life sometimes gets in the way, and tragedy gets in the way, and darkness gets in the way. But that doesn't make that promise no longer available to you. You see, the nation of Israel had been in slavery 400 years, but the promise was still a reality. You might be in slavery to bondage or to sin or in broken relationships, but that doesn't change the fact that that promise is still valid in your life. But the reality is, God wants to do some change in your life. There's unrecognizable change that he needs to effect in your life for you to become ready for that promise. It's a big deal that he wants to do that in you. Let's continue to read out of verse 8. It says this, "The Israelites grieved for Moses in the plains of Moab for 30 days until the time of weeping and mourning was over." This is a big deal to them. This is a big deal to God. He gives them the freedom to mourn and to grieve the loss of the past. So point two, you'll see it on the screen. We need to mourn the loss of the past before we can embrace the opportunity of the future. Sometimes our past is so dark and damaged, it seems to like chase us down all the time. And it's hard for us to separate from that for the embrace of the opportunity of the future. But we've got to mourn and grieve that that is our past, and God is going to use it for our good. For others, our past is full of great things and promise and success and maybe financial success. And God's calling us to do this strange thing that would need us to separate from that success and trust him. We have to grieve that reality. We have to grieve the loss of the past, or we'll never be able to embrace the opportunity. But let me explain what it is to grieve. In fact, grieving has a defined process. Psychology recognizes it very clearly. There's 5 steps to grieving. The first is denial. When we're grieving or mourning the loss of something, we enter into denial. It's often followed by anger, then followed by bargaining. We try and convince ourselves if we would have done something different, our situation would be different. Then it's followed by depression. We're discouraged by the reality that we've lost something. And then ultimately, the cycle comes around to acceptance. At the end of any grieving process that's been walked through healthily, there's an acceptance that happens at the end. In fact, we see that here. The people of Israel mourned for 30 days until the time of weeping and mourning was over. They had come to this place of acceptance. God, we don't understand it fully. We're angry about it. We're depressed about it. We've tried to bargain with you so that you could change history for us. But ultimately, the time of grieving is over. Let me tell you a story about one of my friends. He and his wife got married really young, about 20 years old. They're this great couple, but they dreamed to be a couple and only a couple the rest of their lives. They had no desire for kids, although they're the kind of couple that would be phenomenal parents. And they saved up all their money because they wanted at a certain point in marriage to break away from their careers and just kind of go on a 5-year world tour of missions and outreach and fun. And along the way, through a series of tragedies, they actually end up inheriting 3 children from a family member who was tragically killed. This was God's plan for their life, and they knew it, and it was all they could do to just say, God, we embrace these children. You've done this for us. What else are we to do? These children have no one else. But yet, in that period of time, it was one of their most difficult times of life because all of their dreams and hopes about being this couple that tours the world and never has the responsibility of kids just completely got overhauled. 3 children under the age of 6 are now theirs. And I remember my friend telling me one time, he was out on a long road bike, the trip he was doing, and he just pulled over to the side of the road, stood next to a fence, and sobbed for an hour. because in that moment, he had grieved the loss of this great plan he had for his life, the loss of freedom as a couple to do whatever you want, go wherever you want, minister however you want. He was losing something great, and he had to come to this place of acceptance, of finality, that this is my new reality. And yet, years later, he would tell me that he's experienced love and excitement that he never would have dreamed he could have with kids. He's a phenomenal dad, and his wife is a phenomenal mother, and they are experiencing new territory in a place they have never been before that they could have never dreamed or hoped to ask for. But it required on their parts this ability to mourn the loss of the past, because before they could fully embrace the opportunity for the future. I want to say this might be true for you. You've got to mourn that loss of the past. It's okay. It's okay to wrestle with God through those things, but ultimately come to the place of acceptance that he's got something new for you. He wants you to embrace the future. Let's move back to Joshua 1. We need to do that hard work internally of this reality that change is often unrecognizable, and we've got to mourn our past and move on in order to embrace the future, because Joshua gives us some key things that we're to do to get ready for this new territory. I'll start back in Joshua 1:1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land that I'm about to give them to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. You see, Jesus starts, or God starts with Joshua and says, here's a promise for you. Not only did I promise it to Abram, but I'm giving you a promise that everywhere you're about to step will be yours. But let me tell you what this feels like to someone encamped in the nation of Israel. There's 2 million of them at this point. The river Jordan is almost impassable in this area often, but in this season in particular, in this stage of history, the banks had flooded. You've got 2 million people staring across at another land, across a river that has flooded its banks, and God is saying, I will give you every step, every place you put your foot, I will give it to you. There's a promise. Point 3 on the notes today, anchor into God's promises. Because we don't know this way we've gone before, as Pastor George has inspired us to understand. But God has given us great promises. I'm about to give it to you. Everywhere you set your foot will be yours. When Jeanette and I go through hard times, we anchor into a life verse for us. It is true for many of you, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans not to harm you, but to prosper you, to give you a hope and a future. When we go through difficult times where we don't see what the future holds for us, when we don't understand why he's having us walk through this season, we anchor into God's promises that he knows the plan he has for us, even if we don't see it or understand it. Let's continue in Joshua 5. It says this, no one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. That's another promise. It continues like this, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave or forsake you. See, this reality of being with Moses was very experiential. God says, as I was with Moses, the miracles, the plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, as I was with him, that experience where I've proved myself, I will be with you also. I will never leave you or forsake you. You see, point 4 is to be encouraged by God's faithfulness. To be encouraged by God's faithfulness. When Jeanette and I are going through hard times, we remind ourselves not only of the truth, the promise, that he has great plans for us, but we're encouraged by the stories of God's faithfulness in our lives. You see, there's been two times in our life where we've been told we can't have kids. Very distinctly, in fact, some of the best doctors at the University of Colorado Medicine facility at the Eschewton Center out there in Aurora have looked at us, and see, they're paid to make in vitro happen, and they're honored in their profession by making in vitro happen, and they looked at us. We'd already had one child after they had said we couldn't. But they looked at us the second time and said, we don't want your money. We don't even want to try and help you. In vitro will not work. Like, there's no hope. Be grateful for the one child you had. And we walked through that season and said, God, we're reminded of your faithfulness. We can see it in our son. We're already told we couldn't have one. 3 months later, we find out we're pregnant with our second. You see, when we remember that God has promised us things and we remember the faithfulness of Him before, it encourages us. It encourages us before we're about to take that step across the Jordan into new territory. We're reminded that God has done this before. He's done it for Moses. He did it for all of us. He's going to do it again when we cross this river. We're encouraged by God's faithfulness. Let's continue to read in verse 6. Actually, let me say this first. God's done amazing things in each of your lives. I'm sure they're going through your head right now, where He's protected you, where He's kept you, where He's inspired you, where He's transformed you. Anchor into that in this season. Anchor into God's faithfulness and the promise He has over your life. Just as God had a promise for the nation of Israel, He has that over your life. I'm asking you to anchor into that and to come back each week to this series, because I believe God's calling you deeper into a walk with Him. Come back and be inspired by the story of Joshua to see those promises fulfilled in your life. Verse 6 is this: "Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave to you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." So in this moment here, we'll continue reading. Let me check my notes. I moved some things around. Yeah, right there. So Joshua ordered the officers and the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get your supplies ready. 3 days from now, you will cross the Jordan. He's getting them prepared. You will go in and take possession of the land your Lord your God has given you for your own. He tells them in this section, there's one more time later, but he tells them a total of 4 times, be strong and courageous. Be strong and very courageous. Do not be discouraged. Do not be terrified. I will be with you wherever you go. When we're approaching new territory, when we see it on the horizon, when what God's calling us to a deeper walk, we're to be strong and courageous. Here's what I want to ask you to do. Point 5, courageously believe for the impossible again. You see, there was a moment in each of your lives that you probably had dreams about life, what life would bring you. And it's sort of gone sideways. But I want you to believe again courageously for the impossible. As a church, we've had 45 years of glory. We've had God do amazing and miraculous things amongst us. And we're in this season where we're getting ready for another 45 years. In fact, I was hanging out with one of our elders for coffee earlier this week, and he's encouraged because many of the elders are coming to him and saying, man, there's something happening again. We're excited. We know the future's on the horizon. There's new territory. There's a fresh move of God in us. And I said, how would you describe it? Because I've been around again this time 16 months and doing a lot of work on the internal workings of how we work as a church. Not as much on the outside as what you see here on a Sunday, but a lot of work on the inside. He said, Jeff, God gave me a word for you. He said, it's like a butterfly in a cocoon. You see, there's greatness happening behind that cocoon, but you can't see it. But no less is true that there's something transformative happening inside. And he said, Jeff, we're in a cocoon kind of season. God is reworking on us, re-transforming us to get ready for us to take flight again as a church, for us to impact our community, our city, for God to do beautiful and amazing things, for us to set soar as a church. But we're in this season where we've got to trust that God is doing that, and we're going to believe for the impossible again. We're going to believe that God can do it. So I want to encourage you in your life, in your marriage, in your relationships, believe for the impossible again. God is doing something. If you let Him, if you allow Him to prepare your hearts, He is doing something. He needs you to believe in the impossible again. Be strong and courageous because I am with you, He promises. Let's continue to read verse 12. But to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said this, This was this group of tribes that had a little different assignment from the rest of the nation of Israel. Joshua said this, "Remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you. The Lord your God is giving you rest and has granted you this land. Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan." Let's be clear here. They're already east of the Jordan. The promised land is on the west side. But this group of tribes, their promised land is actually right there in the east. They've already arrived. They've entered into the season of rest. They're there. But Joshua tells them, you can settle there. It's okay. Moses has given you the east of the Jordan, but all of your fighting men, fully armored, must cross over ahead of your brothers. You are to help your brothers until the Lord gives them rest, as he has done for you, and until they have taken possession of the land that the Lord your God is giving them. After that, you may go back and occupy your own land, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you, east of the Jordan, toward the sunrise. Then they answered Joshua this, whatever you have commanded us to do, we will do, and whenever you send us, wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with us as he has been with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey your words, whatever you may command them, will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. They rehearse this themselves. You see, there's this group that have been already in their promised land. They're at rest. They're settled. They've arrived, for lack of a better word. But the call out of Scripture for them is to send your mighty men, send them full of armor, go fight for the rest of them that haven't made it to their promised land. That you have a role to play in this story. Just because you found Jesus 20 years ago and have maybe even become comfortable in your walk with him, God still wants you to lead the charge for others that need to come into their promised land. That there's a role for you to play. There's a role for you to play in the life of your family, in the life of your marriage, in the life of your coworkers that have not come to a place of rest in life, have not walked into their fullest potential. You have a role to play. Don't forget that just because you've landed doesn't mean God doesn't need you to go. So go do that and then return back to that place of rest. Point six is this, play your role for the greater good. You see, if you just play your role for yourself, you sort of miss the point. Play your role for the greater good that not only does God want you in a place of rest into your promised land, but he has promised land for others, and he needs you to walk before them, fight for them so that they can arrive there as well. And I would say this especially to the older generations in our church. We are so grateful for you. There's so much legacy that you've built in this church, and it's because of your faithfulness that there's even a path for us to run on right now in this season. But I would ask you, that you not stop playing your role for the greater good, that there are many generations that are going to follow that need you to step in front of them and lead and fight for them, for you to leave that place of your comfort zone and to lead the charge to help others find their potential and then go back to where God's brought you. We need you, every one of you, to find your role and play your role for the greater good. It's important that we transition in a healthy way, in an honoring way, from a series of generations that have been faithful to a series of generations that need to learn how to be faithful. But collectively, as Pastor George reminded us, none of us have been this way before. But those generations that have been a whole lot of ways before, we need your prayers, we need your investment, we need your wisdom, your guidance, your support, because as a church, none of us have been there before. And we want to move forward. There's new territory for us. We believe that God is calling our church into uncharted territory. And there's hope for us. There's a promise for us. There's another 45 years plus of greatness God wants to do here. But we need to play our role for the greater good. I also believe for each of you here that there is a great horizon for you, that it's just around the corner. It's completely uncharted territory. And that God in this season is wanting to prepare you for that territory.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.